We're holding on across Aleph, Amud Beis, the third line from the bottom. We learned yesterday that a get can't be written on something that's mechubal karka, that's attached to the ground. Because we said if you give it when it's attached, then you have a problem because that's not really considered giving or for various other reasons that we talked about yesterday. And if you detach it from the ground, then you have the problem that we learned yesterday that you can't. You have to have the get is able to be given as soon as it's written rather than you have to detach it in between. So now, as is often the case in the Gemara, we have something that's kind of in between. It's attached but not attached to the ground, namely a flower pot. So now we're going to be dealing in the Gemara with the question of that, which one is it considered lahalacha. So the Gemara says, Kosvei al-cheres shal otzit nokul. Suppose the first case is that the husband wrote the get on the earthenware on the outside of a flower pot with a hole. Now, in general, in halacha, what we consider as a flower pot with a hole is considered like the ground. Because now, since through the whatever is growing in the flower pot is now able to get nourishment from the ground, it's now able to get the odor and the whatever else is wafting up from the ground through the hole. And therefore, what's growing in there usually is considered like part of the ground itself. But here we have, so here he actually just took the flower pot itself, wrote the get on the outside of it, and gave it to her. So then for sure kosher, then for sure it'll be kosher. Because the shaka levi yoiv leini alei, because after all, it may be considered for some areas of halacha like the ground, but nevertheless, the fact is that the flower pot itself is not attached to the ground, it's metabolin. So therefore, no problem. He'll be able to take it and give it to her. There's no mechusil ktsitsa. There's no cutting off from the ground that it has to be. Rashi adds also, now what are you going to be concerned? That he might break off a piece of the flower pot that has the get written on it and give it to her. He's not going to do that. He doesn't want to destroy the flower pot. So therefore, the pashtus, he'll give her the whole thing, so that would be the equivalent, for example, of having the get written on a large sheet of paper, and then he gives her the entire sheet. We discussed yesterday what Tosfos says, the question about would you be allowed to cut off part of the sheet beforehand, but in any case, here, we're not concerned that he's going to break off part of the flower pot and give her only that piece. However, the question is, what if he wrote the get on a leaf that's attached to a plant that's growing in that flower pot with a hole? So again, the issue is over here that on the one hand, on the one hand, for many purposes in halacha, we consider that plant attached to the ground. For example, a person were to pick that plant or a leaf from it on Shabbos, he'd be chayev. And the Gemara is going to bring now, actually, soon after this matter of the get, the Gemara is going to give a couple of other things that have to do that also relate to the fact that this is considered attached to the ground. On the other hand, the fact is it's not attached. The fact is it's not actually touching the ground. So therefore, Abaya Amar Kosher v'Rava Amar Posel. So Abaya says that in that case the get will be fine. Rava says no. Abaya Amar Kosher because the shakula v'yayvay niyava. Because again, all he has to do is take the whole flower pot and give it to her. There's no ktsitsa there's no cutting off from the ground, so therefore there should be no problem. Rava Amar Posel gzera shema yiktayim. Rava says though it's possible because a gzera that he might pull off the leaf before he gives it to her, rather than giving her the whole flower pot. Again, it's one thing if he wrote it on the outside of the flower pot, fine. He's not going to want to destroy the flower pot, therefore he'll give her the whole thing. But he may figure, why should I have to give her the whole flower pot if I wrote the get on one leaf of it? Shouldn't it be enough that I just give her one leaf of it? And that would be a problem because then you have to do a cutting. You have to do a cutting off before you give her the get. And we said, and we learned yesterday that that's no good. So now the Gemara is going to go on to discuss various other examples with a flower pot like that. When exactly is it considered karka and when not? An interesting point also, Shlomo Zalman has a whole discussion about, for example, would it be considered ground as far as, let's say, are you allowed to work that soil in the flower pot on Shemitah? But here we're going to have in the Gemara, various other things that we're going to have that we're going to say there may be a difference when we say that that's considered part of the ground and when not. So the Gemara goes on. Another example. Suppose the flower pot belongs to Reuven and whatever it is, the seeds in it that are growing in it belong to Shimon. So now, if Reuven, who owns the flower pot, sells the whole thing to the one who owns to Shimon, who owns the seeds, then it's like any other, the flower pot itself is considered like any other metalbalin. So therefore, kiven shem moshach, as soon as Shimon does meshicha on the flower pot, kona, then he'll have been koneh, because after all, it's metalbalin. But mocha bal zroim bal otit, but the other way around, if Shimon sells the whole thing to Reuven, loy kona amshi yasik bezroim, then Reuven is not going to acquire it until he actually does a chazaka on the seeds. Because again, the seeds being in a flower pot with a hole, they're considered attached to the ground in halacha. So therefore, and as usual, when you sell land, you don't do mashicha on land, of course. You have the three ways of being koina land are kesef, shtar, and chazaka. So here you'd have to have one of them, and the pashtus, so for example, we're saying mochar, so we wouldn't necessarily need to be necessarily that he does a chazaka. If money exchanges hands, then that would work. But then he does a chazaka on the seeds. He does something to demonstrate that the seeds are his, and then therefore that becomes his. Tosfos points out, of course, the same thing would be true if they all belong to Reuven, and he sells the whole thing, flower pot and seeds and all, to Shimon. You'd have the same thing. The chiddush is over here that even though already Reuven owns the flower pot from before, nevertheless, if he buys the seeds from Shimon, then he still has to make a chazaka on it. Similarly, otzitzu zroim shel echad. Similarly, if the flower pot and the seeds all belong to one person, or mochra ma'acher, and he sells the whole thing to somebody else, then hechzik bezroim kana otzitz. Then, as soon as the other guy does a chazaka on the seeds and the soil that they're planted in, then right away he's koina the flower pot as well. Because when you coin a karka, you can be coin a metalpalin with it. The Zuri Shashaninu, this would be an example of a Mishnah that says in Kiddushin, Nechosim She'en Lahem Achrayus. Nechosim that do not have Achrayus, which we learned previously means metalpalin, where there's no Achrayus in the sense that, number one, they're not meshubud to any debt that he owes, only karka is, and number two, that when you sell them, there's generally no achrayus clause in it. Anyway, nikman in nechosim sheyesh lahen achrayus, they can be acquired together with nechosim sheyesh lahen achrayus, with karka, the kesef, or v'shtar, or v'chazaka, with one of those three methods. In other words, there's a concept in halacha called kinyan agav, where if I'm selling you karka, then automatically, I can have that whatever, if I'm selling you metalphalan at the same time, you will be koina those metalphalan agav together with the land. We're going to learn in Kiddushin in a few months, Bez Hashem, we're going to talk about the details of that. Do the metalphalan have to be in the land? Is it enough that, or do they not? And various other details like that. So we'll learn about that. We'll learn about that in Kiddushin, Bez Hashem. But here we have an example. So Reuven is selling the whole flower pot with the seeds in it. And the seeds, again, are considered mechobel karka because of the hole in the flower pot. Therefore, as soon as the other guy does a chazaka on the seeds, which is the karka, right away, together with that, he acquires the metalphalin, which is the flower pot itself. On the other hand, hechzik ba'otzitz, on the other hand, if Shimon, having bought the whole thing, makes a chazaka on the otzitz, so he didn't on the flower pot, so he didn't do meshicha. He just did. Rashi says he did some malacha, for example, on the flower pot itself. Loikona af otzitz loikona. Then he hasn't been kona the flower pot either. Ad she yachsik bizroyin until he actually does chazaka on the seeds. Because again, you can't a kinyan chazaka on the talplin is not effective. On the talplin, you have to do meshicha or one of the other valid methods of kinyan. If they did, for example, a kinyan chalifin, a kinyan sudder, that would also work, but if they're doing a regular sale, then he needs to actually do meshicha on the metalpalin that he bought. So therefore, he'll either have to do chazaka on the seeds and along with them, and then he gets a flower pot, or he has to do mashricha on the flower pot. Another din. Nikvay ba'aretz v'noyfe v'chutz la'aretz. Here's another din. What if the flower pot is sitting and is sitting right on the border of Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz? And the side with the hole is in Eretz Yisrael, and the side where the leaves are growing out, the leaves and the stems or whatever, is sticking out outside of Eretz Yisrael. So they're growing on an angle, and you have a large vase of flowers, let's say, or whatever, they're sticking out over the border into Chutz La'aretz, but the hole in the flower pot, which is where we're saying that the seeds get their vitality from the ground through the hole, that side is in Eretz Yisrael. So which one do you go according to? Abaya Amabos and Nikvay Ezlanim, Rava Amabos and Noifay Ezlanim. So Abaya says we're going to go according to the side where the hole is, because since that's where the hole is and it's getting its nourishment from there, so therefore it's going to be considered produce of Eretz Yisrael, therefore it's going to be Chayev and Maiser. Rava Amabos and Noifay Ezlanim, Rava says we're going to go according to where the stems and the leaves and whatever are. So therefore, it's going to be Potter from Meiser. So Rashi mentions the point of Potter min haTorah the Chutz La'aretz, because in some parts of Chutz La'aretz you have Midrabanan, you have to take Meiser. The mentions in Yadayim and in Brachas and a couple of other places that there are certain parts outside Eretz Yisrael, the lands of Ammon and Moab and Mitzrayim and Bavel, that the Chachamim made rules that Midrabanan you have to take Meiser there. But Min haTorah, since it's on the border, then would be Potter from Meiser. Which would mean, by the way, if it means that it's part that it's chayiv only derabanan, it would mean you can't use it, you can't take meiser from it on behalf of produce that's chayiv daraisa, according to Rava, or vice versa. You couldn't take from produce that's chayiv daraisa on it. You would have to take from itself. You'd have to take meiser from the produce itself, or from something, or from produce from a similar kind of thing that's also only chayiv derabanan. Anyway, the Gemara goes on. Bid ashrush. Now, if the roots of the plant that are in the flower pot have actually started sticking out of the hole, and they actually got embedded into the soil of Eretz Yisrael, kula amalei pligi, then there would be no machlokas. Now that it's literally actually attached to the soil of Eretz Yisrael, for sure, even Rava would agree now that it's considered like produce of Eretz Yisrael. Ki pligi b'deloy ashrush. The machlokas is only where it hasn't gotten to that point yet. The roots are still inside the flower pot. But on the other hand, the fact is, it is getting nourishment through the hole, because whatever is exuding from the soil of Eretz Yisrael is going into the flower pot through the hole. Whatever nutrients or whatever are being carried through the air are getting into the flower pot, and the tree is growing, and the tree in the flower pot is growing from those. So now the machlokas would be, is that enough for it to be considered produce of Eretz Yisrael, like Abaya, or no, like Rava? So the Gemara asks, but Ashrish loy pligi. You're telling me that they don't argue where it has taken root, and that they would all agree that you go according to where the roots are, and the roots are rooted in Eretz Yisrael. But v'hatnan, we learn the last Mishnah above Metzia goes, shtei ganes zu agav zu, you have two gardens, one on top of the other, so one of them is, so they're next to each other, it actually explains, but one of them is on a higher elevation than the other. So now what you actually have is, you have like a terrace, so you have the soil is terraced, you have the top one, then you have a vertical drop off between it and the next one, and then you have the next one. So it's like stepwise. Now what happens is you have the yerek bin tayim, and then you have vegetables growing out of that vertical wall between them. So where is it rooted? It's rooted in the soil under the top one, because the top one owns that top piece of land, and he owns it all the way down until the center of the earth, which in that case that'll include the part in which this vegetable is rooted. On the other hand, it's hanging out over the leaves and stems of it and everything are hanging out over the bottom, over the bottom garden. So who does it belong to? Rav Meir Omer Shel Elyon, Rav Yehuda Omer Shel Tachton. And Rav Meir says, therefore, it belongs to the top one. And Rav Yehuda says it belongs to the bottom one. So in other words, it sounds like they're arguing whether you go according to the roots or according to the foliage. So in that case, even if in our case of the flower pot on the border of Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz, so you're telling me that if the roots are actually embedded into the soil of Eretz Yisrael, then it would be considered Eretz Yisrael produce and chayiv and ma'isim and atorah. But based on that Mishnah and Bava Metzia, it sounds like even then it shouldn't be universally agreed that you go according to the roots. Seems like Rabbi Yehuda is going to go according to where the foliage is. So in this case, if that's sticking out into Chutz La'aretz, why would we be saying that everybody agrees that in that case everybody agrees it belongs to Eretz Yisrael, but why should it? So the Gemara answer is Hasim Kedkatani Taima. Well, there it has nothing to do with whether you go according to the roots or whether you go according to the foliage. The Mishnah continues. Amar Rav Meir, Mayim Yutze Elyon Litzavos Afare Ein Tanyer. Because Rav Meir says that it's not so much that whether we go according to the roots or whether we go according to the leaves. It's more a matter if the top one wanted to take away his soil, then there'd be no vegetables over there because they're growing in his soil. So therefore, in other words, it's not a matter of whether we go according to the roots. The fact is, the roots are actually in his property. So therefore, it should belong to him. And Omer Rav Yehuda, Mayim Yirtza Atachton L'malos Es Ginos Se'ofer Ein Kanyera. And Rav Yehuda says, on the other hand, if the bottom one wanted to fill up his garden with dirt and put it on them and then make his garden be on the level of the one above him, then there would also be no vegetables growing over there. So in other words, each one has the ability to prevent that vegetable from growing, and therefore we have an argument that each one should have rights to the vegetable. In fact, in the Mishnah over there, Rav Shimon kind of makes a compromise. He says, basically, I agree that it should belong to the top one. So he says the top one sticks out his arm as far as it can reach. Whatever he can reach belongs to him. The rest, we assume he's mafkir to the bottom one, because what he's going to do, go ask the bottom one, can I come into your garden and pick these vegetables? So no, then at that point he's mafkir it to the second one. You have the very last words above Matthew over there, or they told this over to Shabur Malka, and he was very pleased with that and said that we should give a big yashikoyach to Rav Shimon, a period namti a little Rav Shimon, that he came up with such an ingenious compromise. But basically, he holds like Rav Meir. Anyway, the point is, so it has nothing to do with whether basically we go according to the roots or whether we go according to the foliage. There, the fact is, each one has the ability to prevent this plant from growing by taking away his dirt or by filling up his garden with dirt. So in other words, Tosfos says, to begin with, the Gemara assumed when it brought in this Mishnah, now, the fact that a mayor says, Mayim Yirtze Elyon, the fact that he could take away his dirt, the Gemara at first understood that wasn't the main reason. The main reason would be that a mayor would say we go according to the roots always. And now we're saying that, no, we're actually saying that we're just arguing on the Svara which one of them is contributing more to the growth of the plant. So anyway, so no proof one way or the other from that. So not necessarily just because the roots are embedded in one soil does that mean that there should be and the foliage is hanging over the other. There should be a machlokas. So we could well say in the case of our flower pot that's on the border between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz, you could say that after all, if the roots are embedded in the soil of Eretz Yisrael, then there's no machlokas and everybody would agree that it's produce of Eretz Yisrael. Because there you don't really have this consideration that we're saying that you could fill up the one side with dirt, or you could take away your dirt. So it's more just a matter of that by default we go according to the roots. Okay, the Gemara asks about Kati with the Ashrus Leipzig. Still, you're telling me that they don't argue Abaya and Rava when the plant gets rooted in Eretz Yisrael, the plant that's in the flower pot. V'atanya, but we learn in a braisa, a very similar case. If you have a tree where part of it is in Eretz Yisrael and part of it is in Chutz La'aretz, so again, it's growing right on the border. And right now, the Gemara is assuming that it means that the foliage itself, the leaves and fruits themselves, are partially in one, partially in the other. So tevel b'cholin meurav and zebizeb divrei Rebbe. So Rebbe says in that case, what you have is in every fruit from this tree, tevel and cholin are mixed together. Meaning, in other words, that every single fruit on this tree is partially getting its nourishment from Eretz Yisrael and partially from Chutz La'aretz. So every single fruit from this tree is mixed tevel and cholin. The point of it being, Rashi says again, it would mean that when you're taking maaser from it, you can't take other produce and give maaser on behalf of this one, because the other produce is completely chayev, and this one is half chayev, half potter. When you're giving truma and maaser from it, you'd have to give from the produce, from the fruit of this tree itself. So you'd have, for example, it's an apple tree, let's say, so you're harvesting apples, now you'd have to do, you take from those apples themselves, and you take out truma and maaser, rather than as under ordinary circumstances. If it hadn't been like that, you would just be able to. You have all those apples, and then you take other apples, and you take truma and maaser on behalf of these, but here you can't do that. That divrei Rebbe, that's what Rebbe says. Rav Shimon Gamliel, no, Hagodah b'chiyuv chayev, Hagodah b'chiyuv potter. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, whatever grows inside Eretz Yisrael is chayev, whatever grows outside Eretz Yisrael would be potter. So in other words, it sounds like essentially he's saying that you draw a line down the tree on the exact border, and any fruits that are outside of that line are potter. My love, mixas noifei ba'aretz, mixas noifei b'chotz la'aretz. So l'chora, aren't we talking about where some of the foliage of the tree is inside Eretz Yisrael and some is outside? And it sounds then like we're saying that Reb Shimon Gamliel is still saying that we don't go strictly according. Now, even though we're talking about, it actually says, it sounds like all of the roots are in one or the other. We're saying that, after all, we're only saying that when we say Miksase Ba'aretz and Miksase Ba'chutzaretz, the pashtus, we mean we could even be talking about a case where all the roots are on one side of the border, but the leaves and branches are partially on one side, partially on the other, because the tree is tilted. And still Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying that we go according to, so still Rebbe and Rav Shimon Gamliel are saying that it's partially Eretz Yisrael and partially Chutz La'aretz. So Rebbe is going to say every single fruit is mixed to it. Rav Shimon Gamliel says we're going to draw the line on the border, but neither of them are saying anything about the roots. So on the face of it then, that means the roots don't matter. It sounds like the foliage matters. So in that case, then, so what are we saying before? That Abaya and Rava would both agree that if the plant is in the flower pot is rooted in Eretz Yisrael, then it's considered Eretz Yisrael produce. The answer is loy. The answer is that's not what Reb Shimon Gamliel and Rebbe mean. They mean miktas shoshin ba'aretz or miktas shoshin b'chutz la'aretz. We're talking about that actually some of the roots are in Eretz Yisrael and some of them are in chutz la'aretz. So therefore, so Rebbe, we understand easily enough, because the roots themselves are partially on one side, partially on the other, therefore the fruits themselves are all mixed. Well, in my time at the Reb Shimon Gamliel, then why does Reb Shimon Gamliel, how could he hold that the fruits that grow on one side of the border are Eretz Yisrael and the other are Chutz La'aretz, if they're getting their nourishment from the roots, which the roots themselves are half in one and half in the other? So why would he say, Hagodah b'chiyuv chayev, Hagodah b'chiyuv potter? He should be saying, like Rebbe, that each fruit is a blend of nourishment from the ground of Eretz Yisrael and from the ground of Chutz La'aretz. The answer is the mafsik tsunma. So we're talking about the case where underneath the tree, between the roots, there's hard ground. So the hard ground or rock, actually, tsunma means more, Rashi explains, means a ridge of rock. So what you have is the roots started growing. The roots are, in fact, growing, some on the Eretz Yisrael side, some on the Chutz La'aretz side. But then you have, between them, there's a piece of rock that separates one set of roots from the other, and that rock is exactly on the border. Eventually, eventually you come to the trunk of the tree, then it grows, so they grow from the different sides, eventually they grow up over the rock, and you have one unified trunk, and it grows up from there. But below that point, it's divided in two by the rock, and obviously one side is not getting nourishment from the other, because the rock is separating. So that would be the case. So therefore, the Shimon Gamliel would say, in that case, since the roots are separate on one side and the other, therefore you have even further up the tree, even though eventually you have one trunk above the rocks, then you still have that the two sides are going to be considered separate in terms of Truma and Maaser. So my time at the Rebbe, and why would Rebbe say that in that case? Nevertheless, we still say that all of them are Kevel and Chol and mixed together, because the Hadri Ivy, because after all, Rebbe would say it does join back together, because you have one trunk, and the sap of the tree does circulate throughout the whole trunk, and therefore that's reason enough for it to be considered one tree. So in other words, Rav Shimon Gamliel would be saying, in effect, that the fruits that are growing directly above the roots that are in Eretz Yisrael, and again, those are separated from the ones in Chutz Laaretz by this rock, then therefore those fruits that are growing on the Eretz Yisrael side directly above the Eretz Yisrael roots would be considered Eretz Yisrael produce, and the ones directly over the Chutz Laaretz roots would be considered Chutz Laaretz produce. Whereas Rebbe is saying that no, the fact is that yes, you have separate sets of roots on both sides, but afterward they join together into one trunk, and therefore you can't really say that any particular fruit has gotten nourishment only from Eretz Yisrael or only from Chutz Laaretz. So my commitment. So what is the underlying machlokes? The fact is, we see that the tree does have one trunk. So that's the answer. Mar sava avira mevalvel. Rebbe holds that the air space above it, in other words, the fact that the trunk is one, therefore that makes it that everything is considered mixed up, and therefore, in other words, you can't say that the nourishment that the Eretz Yisrael roots got is only going up that part of the tree. The air that tree is standing in causes everything to be mixed up. So as it goes through the trunk, it all gets mixed up, and everything is getting nourishment from every other part. Whereas Rav Shimon Gamliel says each part stands for itself. In other words, once you have nourishment that one particular root gets, then the fruit above that. And again, they're separated by ground. So where all the roots are in Eretz Yisrael, the Rashi explains, of course, nobody's going to say that you go according to the foliage, because for sure, then we're going to say all the roots are in Eretz Yisrael, therefore it's getting all its nourishment from Eretz Yisrael, and therefore it would be considered Eretz Yisrael produce. But here, where you have two separate groups of roots, then Rav Shimon Gamliel can say each fruit on the tree gets its nourishment only from certain roots. The one that it's above, it doesn't really get mixed up inside the trunk, and therefore each one is going to be distinct, and you're going to have Eretz Yisrael fruits and Chutz Laaretz fruits. Okay, so these are all various cases. So again, therefore, so we have no reason to say. So it's one thing where you have some roots in Eretz Yisrael, some outside Eretz Yisrael. Then we could say, like Rav Shimon Gamliel was saying, that each one gives separate nourishment to the fruits above it. Or Rebbe would say that it all gets mixed up in the trunk. But where you have the root itself is in Eretz Yisrael, as in the case of the flower pot before with Abaye and Rava, there we're going to say that it gets its entire nourishment from there, and therefore, even though the foliage and the leaves and the branches and fruits are sticking out over Chutz Laaretz, nevertheless, it's going to be considered Eretz Yisrael produce. Only when the root is not sticking out of the flower pot, of the hole in the flower pot, then you have the question, then you have Abaye versus Rava saying whether you go according to where the hole is, because it is getting nourishment from the ground through the air and into that hole, or whether or not. Okay. Returning now to matters of Gittin, we said Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira Oymachola, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira says that now we had the Tanakhama of the Mishnah had said that you can write a get on anything, and Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira had said that you can't write, he said, on paper that was previously erased, or on diftara, which we're going to define diftara in the Gemara now, is parchment that has not been completely tanned. Tosfos points out, Rashi had mentioned this point earlier, actually, that Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira would agree. Now, the point is, the Gemara is going to say that Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira is concerned that, he actually said in the Mishnah, but he showed Yochel, his daif, it would be very easy to forge something on the get, to remove something that was there and not have it noticeable. So you could have, for example, a tznai, let's say it was written in the get, and then you're going to erase it and it won't be real, and it won't be visible that there ever was a tznai over there. So Tosfos points out that actually, if the entire paper had been erased, then actually it would be fine. You have a Gemara in Bava Basra that tells us that you will be able to see the difference on paper. We have to realize paper in Gemara terminology doesn't mean with a paper that we're familiar with nowadays. It's more, it's papyrus, actually. It's a writing material that was made out of the stems of the papyrus plant that were dried and pressed together. Anyway, the Gemara mentions over there that it's noticeable how many times you've erased it. If you erased it once versus twice, then it'll be noticeable. So if you have, for example, that the entire paper has been erased, and then you write the entire get and the signatures of the agent are all on the erased part, then it would be fine. Because now if you try to erase any part of the get itself, it'll be noticeable. You'll be able to compare it with the signatures of the agent, and you'll see this part was erased only once, and this time seems to have been erased more than once. On the other hand, what we're saying, what Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira is saying would be possible, would be where the Edim only are signed on a part that's erased, and the rest of the get is written on fresh paper. That's when Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira would be saying there's a problem, because now you could erase the whole top part of the get and rewrite something over there, and it would never be known that what was there originally. You wouldn't be able to tell, because it would all look like it was erased once. Anyway, the Chachamim disagree, as we're going to discuss now in the Gemara. So first of all, let's talk about the diftera that Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira is mentioning. What is diftera? So Amar Rav Chiya Ba'asi Mishmei De'ula Gimel Oiras Hein. There are three different stages in the preparation of skin, of parchment, and they have different dinim as far as certain areas of halacha. Really, actually, you have four, because the Gemara is going to describe. You have three different stages that the skin goes through before it becomes parchment, and then eventually you have, after it goes through those three stages, then it's full-fledged parchment. Here the Gemara is not really going to deal with that, because mainly we're focusing on that, mainly he's going to tell us that each one has a different shear as far as Hilchos Shabbos. We know, we learned a few years back in Shabbos, that every item that a person might carry outdoors on Shabbos has a minimum shear for which he's chay of chatos or whatever other consequences. The idea being that if a person carries out something smaller than that, which is not something that people will usually use, it'll still be also to do it, but it'll be potter from the consequences, because it's too small to have any practical use. Unless you have the special case over there that describes if a person has a need for or has something special about a smaller piece of something, then he personally would be chayev for it. But everybody else would be chayev only for the regular shear of it. So a substantial part of Masechta Shabbos spends time talking about these various kinds of things. So here we're going to talk about that the various grades of parchment as you go through. As you go through the various stages of preparing it, each one has a different name and each one has a different shear as far as Hilchos Shabbos. So when it comes to fully tanned parchment, then you already have a Mishnah there in Shabbos that tells us the size. So the three that we're going to focus on over here are matzah, chifa, the diftera. So matzah k'mashmoi, matzah means exactly what it sounds like. The same way as matzah is bread that has not been, normally you have the part of the process of making bread is to give it time to rise, and here you haven't, and therefore it becomes matzah. So therefore, in a certain sense, you could say matzah is incompletely made bread. The same way over here, you could say that matzah is incompletely tanned skin. So it would mean k'mashmoi, exactly what it sounds like, nothing has been done with it yet. D'loi maliach, or d'loi kamiach, or d'loi ofit. It has not been salted, it hasn't been treated with flour, and it hasn't been treated with gall nuts. So the salt helps make it stiffer, the flour, I'm not sure what it does exactly, and the gall nut treatment we learned the other day makes it have a nice, clean, white writing surface. So therefore, before you did anything to that, when it's just a raw skin, then it's called matzah. L'may huchsa lohitzaras Shabbos. So what is that relevant to know as far as Hilchos Shabbos? That there'll be, now you can't say, for example, that if a person were to carry out a piece of it on Shabbos that's large enough, let's say, with full parchment, the Gemara explains over there, the amount a person rechayev for carrying out on Shabbos is the amount to write the smallest parasha in Tefillin, the parasha of Shema Yisrael, because you need a piece of parchment for that. So therefore, that's the smallest piece that has practical use. Again, if you have a person decide that they have a need for a smaller piece of parchment, then yes, they would be chayev for carrying it on Shabbos, but we're talking about a regular person. So on the other hand, with matzah, you can't do that. It's not tanned yet. You can't write tefillin or mezuzah or anything on it. So therefore, there has to be a different shiur for carrying it on Shabbos. So for kama shiur, right, what would be the shiur for carrying out that raw skin like that? So Ketani Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda. Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda teaches a braisa that it would be kedei lotsu mishko ketana. It would be the amount that you could use to wrap up a small weight. People use weights. Rashi describes the weights are made of lead. And over time, the lead can wear away, and that would be a problem because now you have an underweight weight. And the halacha and alpi halacha, the Torah mentions in a number of places you have to be very, very honest in weights and measurements. You can't even keep around a defective weight in your house to use for some other purpose. So you want to make sure that your weights are not going to get worn out. So what do? You wrap them in something. So what would you wrap it? So what might you wrap it in? You would wrap it in a piece of untanned leather like that. The kama, so what size weight are we talking about? I'm going to buy a key river de pumpadissa. The size of the smallest weight in pumpadissa, a quarter of a quarter, so 1/16. Perhaps just like 1/16 of a calf or something like that. It was a very small weight. But the point is that would be a small amount of untanned leather, of matzah, that would have practical use, that you could use it to wrap up a small weight like that to keep it from wearing out. Next, chifa, the second stage is called chifa, and that would be called the maliach v'le kamiach v'le opet. It's been salted, so now it's been made stiffer, but it hasn't been treated with flour or with gold nuts. L'may hilchsa l'itzaras Shabbos. Again, what's the l'may hilchsa l'itzaras Shabbos? So again, the relevance of knowing about chifa is as far as hilchas Shabbos. The kama shiurei, and the minimum size of it would be k'detanan, like we learn in a Mishnah there in Shabbos, k'de lasis kameya, the minimum amount of carrying out leather on Shabbos would be the size that you could use to cover a kameya. Because now that the chifa is a little bit, it's not quite raw skin anymore, now it's been treated with the first stage with salt. Now you can use it as a wrapping for a kameya. But pashtus, I guess the idea is that with weights, for example, first of all, you want something soft. You don't want something stiff to put it in. But second of all, you're not necessarily carrying it around, so you don't care whether the skin has been tanned. Whereas here, you're talking about a kameya, which is going to be carried around and worn around your neck or whatever. But pashtus, you want leather that's going to be a little bit stiffer. But at that point, you can use leather that has only had the salt treatment, and you could use it to cover that. In fact, that's why it's called chifa, meloshim lachakos. You can use it to cover a kameya. So that would be the minimum amount that a person is chayev for carrying on Shabbos. Tosfos points out, by the way, Rashi says that we're not mentioning over here in this whole discussion, Rabbi Ba'asi is not bringing full parchment, because that's already mentioned in the Mishnah over there in Shabbos, and he wants to tell us things that are not in the Mishnah. The fact is, you were quoting the Mishnah, so therefore, why does he mention it? But the answer is because the Mishnah doesn't use the word chifa over there. It just says skin. So therefore, Rabbi Ba'asi can clarify for us that it means skin at this stage of its processing, as opposed to later on, the Mishnah says klaf, which clearly means fully tanned parchment. So therefore, he doesn't bother mentioning it. Next, diftera. Next, you have the next stage is called diftera. That would be the kamiach v'loy ofet. It's been treated with salt. It's been treated with flour, but it hasn't been treated with golnut. So therefore, the writing surface is still not white and clear, and therefore, it's very easy to erase something on it and rewrite it, and nobody would notice the difference. So the my hilchsa loitzas Shabbos. So again, that's relevant as far as hilchas Shabbos and the kamash yure. What would be the minimum size of that? That a person would be chayev for carrying on Shabbos, to the lichtiv all of us a get, would be the amount that a person could write a get on. So that would follow the chachamim of our Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseder wouldn't allow that. He says you can't use diftera, but the chachamim have no problem with that. They're not worried, as we're going to say in the Gemara now in a minute, about the fact that you might rewrite or that you might erase and rewrite something on the get. Therefore, they say you can use diftera for a get. And therefore, that would be the minimum amount that a person is chayev for carrying diftera on Shabbos. So it comes out basically, we're not really talking about, we're not saying that as it becomes more tan, then you have, let's say you have smaller and smaller shiurim. No, it has nothing to do. Each one, it's for whatever purpose you could use that for. So untanned skin, matzah, is most practically used for, since you can't use it to write anything on, even a get would be possible on it, then therefore you would use it to wrap up your weights. Then when you have one tanned a little more, you can't really use it for that anymore. It's too stiff, but now you can use it to wrap up a kameya and so forth. So it's not that there's a progression over here as far as sizes. Each one is an independent thing depending on the actual use of it. Okay. Now, we said in the mission of a Chachamim Machshirin, the Chachamim say that it is kosher if you write a get on erased paper or on diftera, as we just described. So man chachamim. So who are these chachamim who say that it would be kosher and why? Amar Rabbi Lozer. So Rabbi Lozer, the Amora says, Rabbi Lozer he, it would be Rabbi Lozer the Tana. We have to keep track of throughout Shas. We have Rabbi Lozer the Tana, which is Rabbi Lozer ben Shamua, and then we have Rabbi Lozer the Amora, which is Rabbi Lozer ben Pedos. You have other Rabbi Lozers mentioned in among both the Tanoim and Amoraim, but they're always mentioned with their father's name or with some other distinguishing characteristic. Whereas here, you have plain Rabbi Lozer the Tana and plain Rabbi Lozer the Amora. So here, Rabbi Lozer the Amora is saying that our Mishnah would be according to Rabbi Lozer the Tana. The Omer Edim Asira Kauti, he says, as we've been learning many times in the Masechta, that it's the Edim Asira, the Edim who watch the get being given over, who are Kauti, who do the cutting off of the relationship between the husband and the wife. In other words, Rashi explains, he's going to say the whole concept that you have Edim sign the get is not really Minatora. Minatora, you wouldn't need signatures written in the get at all. All you need is Edim Asira, who watch the get being given over. Now you have to have Edim at all. Rashi points out that at the very end of the Masechta, the Gemara is going to explain that you need Edim when it comes to Dover Shav Erva. In fact, you generally have the rule, Ein Dover Shav Erva, Pachas Mishnayim. You usually have the rule that you need two Edim for a matter of Erva. We learned in Sota, there are certain exceptions to that, but basically you need two Edim. Rabbi Lozer, so now Rabbi Meir has been saying all this time that Edim Chasima Kauti, that it's the Edim who sign it, who create the Krisus, and therefore, according to him, Daraisa, the Edim have to sign, and according to him, indeed, there would be a problem writing a get on erased paper, because then, again, you could erase some part of the get and rewrite it, and it wouldn't be noticeable, and therefore, that's no good. So, because, in other words, Rashi explains what would happen, in other words, according to the mayor, you don't need Edim Asira at all you need is Edim Chasima. So when the woman brings this get, she's gonna bring the get, we're gonna try to find people who can recognize the signatures, or the Edim themselves will recognize the signatures, we're not gonna have Edim Asira. And since the get itself may have been altered, then we're not gonna know, and therefore we can't rely on that. But Rabbi Lozer says, to begin with, you don't need Edim signed in the get anyway. So therefore, what happens, we learned a couple of days ago, that before the get is handed over, the Edim Asira need to read the get. So therefore, if there was a get, if there was a Tanai in the get, then they're going to know. And if they didn't, and if there was a Tanai and it was erased, so what? Then at that point, the get hasn't taken effect yet anyway. So therefore, Rashi also adds, in fact, anyway, when she wants to remarry, just bringing the get with the signatures on it, according to Rabbi Lozer, is not going to be enough anyway. She's anyway going to need to bring Edim Asira, so therefore, and those Edim will be able to testify to what it actually said in the Shad. So that is why, when the Mishnah is saying we don't care if it's written on diftera or on erased paper, where either way it's very easy to alter something without noticing, that could only work according to Rabbi Lozer. Tosfos also brings that Rashi says only that this that Rabbi Lozer would say that you need to have the Edim Asira, that would only be actually if it is written on something that could conceivably be forged or altered. If you have a regular get that's written on a normal piece of paper or parchment, where you can't easily change something without it being noticeable, then Tosfos brings from Rashi Even Rabbi Lazar would agree that you could just rely on the Eidei Chasima. There have to have been Eidei Mesira when the get was first handed over, but later on she doesn't need to always bring those Eidei Mesira to say that she can remarry. It would be enough just to bring the get with the signatures on it, and as long as we can see that nothing has been altered, because it's written to begin with on proper parchment, where if you altered anything it would be noticeable, then it would be fine, actually. Tosfos also discusses this, that Rashi is saying that according to the mayor, in fact, if you write on something that could be forged, it wouldn't work. She doesn't need Eidei Mesira, but she can't bring the Eidei Chasima, because what if something was forged? Tosfos says, now Rashi seems to be implying, though, that if she brought Eidei Mesira, then it would be fine. However, Tosfos says that no. Rav Meir holds, we learned this before, and we're going to learn it soon, beginning of the next parak. Rav Meir holds that the get has to be muchach mitoicha. You have to be able to look at the get and see that everything in it is in the up and up. And here, what you have, it's written on erased paper, or incompletely tanned parchment, or whatever, where you could conceivably change something and not be noticing. Rav Meir would passel such a get, it wouldn't be Mashiach Mitoichai, and therefore, even if you do happen to have the Eidei Chasima or the Eidei Mesira around, Rav Meir would still not allow it. Whereas again, according to Rashi, it comes out that according to Rav Meir, you still would have a way to fix it up by having, he doesn't require Eidei Mesira, but if you had them there, then good. Anyway, on Mishnah, again, saying that we're not worried about Ziyuf, would have to be talking according to Rabbi Lazar. But Omer Rabbi Lazar, further Rabbi Lazar, the Amora says, Lo hichshu Rabbi Lazar el alter. This that Rabbi Lazar, the Tana, is allowing to you to write a get on something that could easily be altered, is only el alter, only if right away, the same day that she got the get, she comes to Beis Din and asks and says, I want you to give me a heter to get married because now I'm divorced. Since it's all on the same day and you have Eidei Mesira, then we're less concerned that something might have been altered. Because now if she alters something at that point on that day, it's still fresh in their mind. And we just said they need to read the get before it's given. So if there was a t'nai in it at the time, then they'll remember it. And now if she comes to Beis Din with the get, and she has the Eidei Mesira over there, then they would be able to tell. They would be able to say, no, this get looks different now than when we first read it. But if you have it 10 days later, then no. Because then by that time, they might have forgotten already what T'nai was written in it. She might have altered it. She might have erased the T'nai or something that was in there, and that would be no good. We've had several times, by the way, this expression, Ad Asara Yomim, we've had several times already in this parak. The Rashash points out an interesting idea. Why does the Gemara often use Asara Yomim in this connection? He says because it relates to the 10 days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. The same way as you have over there, that those are 10 days during which a person can do tshuva, and so to speak, Hashem will change his mind over him. The same way we can be talking about over here, that you have 10 days during which people might remember or forget things. So he says that would be no good. Because we have to be concerned. There might have been a t'nai in it, and she altered the get and removed that t'nai. So therefore, Rabbi Lazar, the Amora, says that even Rabbi Lazar, the Tana, wouldn't allow it in that case. On the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan says that no, Rabbi Lazar would allow it even if she's bringing the get to Beis Din sometime later, 10 days later. Because Rabbi Yochanan says, if there was a t'nai in the get, midker b'chiri, then they would remember it, so that even a while later, so therefore it would be, therefore we can assume if we don't see a t'nai in the get, so even though it's written on something, shayochol is daif, that could be altered, nevertheless, since the Eidei Mesira had to have read it before it was given, then therefore if there was a t'nai in it, we can assume that they would remember, and if they don't say there was a t'nai, then we don't have to assume that there was one, and then it was altered. Okay. Also, the Gemara says, "Amar Rabbi Lazar, v'Amar Rabbi Lazar, loyichshir Rabbi Lazar ela begitin." Rabbi Lazar, the Amora says that Rabbi Lazar the Tana is only allowing this kind of thing, davash yochal is daif, only by gitin, because after all, she brings the get. She could conceivably bring the get right away to Beis Din, and the whole purpose of the get is just in order to mimatir her to remarry. So therefore, so again, people will remember, and there'll be a coil about it. but out of the shar shtaris. But when it comes to other kinds of shtaris, where you keep them for a long time, other kinds of shtaris, you use them in order to collect money. For example, a shtar choy, you keep it for a long time. So therefore, loy, then no, because by that time, by the time he takes it out, the Eid of Hasidah might forget it, and they might be relying only on the Eid of Hasidah. So again, what happens is, it's written on Diftar or whatever, where things can easily be altered and not noticeable. So you're gonna have the Malve, or whoever it is that's holding on to the Shtar, whatever kind of Shtar it is gonna alter something in it, and the Eid of Hasidah are not gonna remember. And it's dichtiv, and we find this concept that other kinds of shtaris can be kept for a long time. You have the story in Yirmiyah where Hashem tells another Yirmiyah to buy a field from his cousin Hanamel. We mentioned this the other day as well. And it'll be a simon that one day there'll be that even though it's about to be churban bayis rishon, nevertheless the Jews are going to return to Eretz Yisrael and continue buying fields and things. Anyway, so Hashem tells him take the shtar that you and Hanamel wrote, on a satam, the chli cheres, and put them into an earthenware vessel, laman yamdu, yomim rabim, so that it'll last for a long time. So we see that other kinds of shtaris have to be able to last for a long time. There we're talking about a shtar mecher, so the same thing would apply as far as shtari halva and other things like that. So Rashi again is explaining that the problem is we might try to rely only on the Eid HaSima. The Eid HaSira will have long since forgotten what it said over there. But Tosfos says that not after all. Why Taka should we? Why would we assume that Beis Din would make a mistake and rely on the Eid HaSima? If Yochel Lezayif, then it's true, Beis Din would see, this is written on Diftara, or what have you, therefore there's concern that it might have been altered, bring in the Eid HaSira, and let's see if they remember. So rather, Tosfos brings that the Ri says that no, it's a Xeris HaKosuv, you have to have, that it has to be Laman Yamdu Yomim Rabim. That's how Rabbi Lozer is learning. Rabbi Yechanan, after the Shtoris, Rabbi Yechanan says it would work even with other Shtoris as well. He says again, because according to Rashi, the vote is that the Eid HaMesira will remember it even a long time later, just like he said before about the get, that they'll remember it even if it was days later. The same way over here it'll work. So the question is, V'aksiv Aman Yamdu Yomim Rabim. So what is he doing with the Pasuk Aman Yamdu Yomim Rabim, implying that a get, that a shtar has to be something that's still usable a long time later? And that means, in other words, so how can you write it on Dovash Yochalei Zayif, on something that could be altered? And the answer is, Hosem Eitz HaTorah Kamash Malon, Rabbi Yechon would say, the Pasuk is not saying a halacha there. The Pasuk is giving a good idea. A person should want to make sure that he puts his shtaris in a place where they'll stay for a long time. Because in this case, in particular, Hashem wants to tell Yirmiyah that this is a sign that one day the Jews will return to Eretz Yisrael and continue buying land and fields over there, so therefore you want the shtar to last a long time. But in general, it's a good idea. The Torah is telling you keep your documents in a place where they'll last a long time. Put them in an earthenware jug. You know, you have, for example, Dead Sea Scrolls are an example of that. They were kept in earthenware jugs and they've survived all the way until nowadays, although there it was also in the desert, so it's a little different, but whatever. Anyway, that's how Rashi learns the Eitz HaTorah. The Ramban explains a little bit differently. The Eitz HaTorah is, don't use something like Yochel Lezayif, use a writing material that can't be easily altered, and that way you don't need the Eid HaMesira. That way you can always rely on the Eid HaChasima. Anyway, that was all according to Rashi. Tosfos again explains that Rabbi Lozer was saying that there's a Gzeris HaKosov over here. He explained that the reason you can't use Dabash Yochel Lezayif by other shtaris is because Gzeris HaKosev, because it says Maman Yamdu Yomim Rabim. So then the question would be, according to Rabbi Yechanan, how does he understand that Gzeris HaKosev? And he understands it's not Gzeris HaKosev, it's just giving us good advice. But then Tosfos goes on to say that maybe Rabbi Yechanan would allow the time in between only by Gittin, because they're likely to remember, but by shtaris, because it usually does not have a tnai in it. Once in a while, you're going to have a get that has a tnai in it, it'll be memorable. Other kinds of shtaris, Tosfos points out, often have tnoyim in them. So therefore, Rabbi Yechanan might not allow that, and therefore the chiddush is that even then he allows it. Okay, and then Tosfos goes on to discuss various other issues over here with shtaris that are yocholis daif or not yocholis daif, and when you can rely on edi chasima and when you can rely on edi mesira. In any case, the point is we're saying that Rabbi Yochanan is saying that, and then the halacha is like him, that when we say that you can write on diftar or what have you, it's not only as far as gittin, you could even do it with other shtaris as well, as long as the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan only as far as gittin. When it comes to other shtaris, the halacha is actually like Rabbi Elazar. It's not just Eitz HaTova, it's a halacha. You have to write shtaris in a way where they can't easily be altered. And in fact, last parak of Bava Basra has a whole bunch of dinim in that regard about various, we've touched on them, so we touched on a few of them in the Masechta so far, that you have to make sure that a shtar is written in such a way that things can't easily be altered in it. And if there's an alteration, that it'll be noticeable, and then we'll deal with it from there.